Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Podcast. I'm Jake Litarski, joined today by John Littering. If you're out there on Twitter, you can give John a follow. That's at JONLITTERINE. You can give me a follow at JakeSki52. Today we're going to be making our fantasy picks for the biggest fights at UFC 230. Hopefully help you guys out a little bit with some DraftKings lineup construction. If you want to read John's full breakdowns, those are free on rotowire.com. Just click on the MMA. All content's free there. You can read his main pay-per-view breakdown. I got our staff picks up. We're going to do our main card breakdown now, and the Fight IQ guys are going to get going tomorrow, Friday at 8 Eastern. They'll do some little bit of live video Q&A for you here. So that's the lineup for Fight Week. John, we've got a heck of a card to discuss at Madison Square Garden for UFC 230. But man, since we last talked, Khabib did what a lot of people thought he was going to do against Conor. I want to hear your thoughts on that fight, and what do you think is next for both guys?
That pretty much went the way I thought it would. Conor landed a couple power shots here and there, but he just had trouble with the grappling of Khabib, which everybody has. And what's next is a really good question. From as far as Khabib goes, you heard his agent, throw out all kinds of ridiculous numbers for him to fight again and how much he wants and all that kind of stuff. So, I think that's kind of a, wait and see situation. Maybe it's something out of the box, like maybe Ben Askren, at a higher weight class or something like that. And, Conor's, same thing. Obviously he's not going to get another title shot right away.
Maybe it could be.
People will buy that fight.
I mean, hell, I'll buy that fight.
Yeah, that's certainly something they could look at. They would certainly promote previous fights and all that kind of stuff. But that's a way they could go, especially since the Diaz Dustin Poirier fight, which was supposed to be on this card, ended up falling through. So the USC hasn't mentioned anything, and there haven't been any reports about that fight being rebooked. So, they definitely could go the Diaz Conor route. But
the Diaz brothers, a little tough to deal with, I guess.
Yeah, that's never changing. That's going to be an ongoing issue. I've said this before. I don't want to say they fight just for the money. But, I think that's certainly, a large, it is for all fighters. But I think that's a good, that's certainly, a main portion of, why they step in the cage these days and why they're so reluctant, to accept seemingly a bunch of fights.
Exactly. And one name I'm glad you brought up in that discussion, John, is Ben Askren. We saw something monumental this week. You know, I should have led in with that. I mean, the UFC made a trade with ONE Championship. They will be sending Ben, or they will be receiving Ben Askren, their welterweight champion over there, one of the widely regarded as one of the best, you know, legitimate undefeated fighters out there. And of course, they're sending away Demetrius Johnson over to ONE. I think that works great for both parties. Everyone's happy. Seems to indicate the UFC will eliminate their men's flyweight division, so because I mean, you got Sergio Pettis moving up, Cejudo's going to move up to fight Dillashaw, so that seems like the next course of action. I mean, what was your reaction when you heard that, John? And I mean, what do you think Ben Askren's ceiling is in the UFC? Have you followed him much at all?
Yeah, I have. He's really good. I was certainly surprised when I heard the news, but you know, when you think about it and when you analyze it a little deeper, it certainly makes a lot of sense. You know, as good as Demetrius Johnson was, you know, for years, you know, the only flyweight champion the UFC had ever had, the UFC was struggling to find fights for him. And he just wasn't, you know, he just wasn't particularly marketable. You know, they would put his flyweight title fights on, you know, the big Fox instead of pay-per-views, which you almost never see. And, you know, we would always talk about, you know, who wants to see him fight, you know, Joseph Benavidez again, or who wants to see him fight John Dodson again, or, you know, whoever it is. And at least this way, you have two world-class fighters who, you know, are certainly going to be well taken care of, you know, money-wise. But, you know, more important than that, for the, you know, as far as the sport goes, it opens up a whole bunch of new opportunities and new matchups. Obviously, more for Askren, considering the depth of the UFC roster compared to the depth of the ONE FC roster. But, you know, both guys, it's, you know, and Ariel Helwani tweeted this out, it's the rare deal where everybody involved was happy. You know, Askren's happy. Johnson's happy. Both companies are happy. So obviously they're happy with, you know, whatever new deals, you know, their new guy signed. So it was a monumental thing. And, you know, they went head first with this. You know, it wasn't, you know, a half-assed trade with, you know, two guys who are just fringe fighters. You know, these are two of the best fighters in the world. Mm-hmm. And Ben Askren, you know, for those who aren't as familiar, because he hasn't fought in the UFC, is, you know, he's kind of got a Habib thing going on as far as, you know, his grappling, and, you know, he sticks to you, and he's really tough to fight and smothering. And, you know, it hasn't been rosy over the years between Ben Askren and Dana White. You know, a lot of war words, a lot of back and forth, but
I think,
you know,
Dana still
end,
has him blocked on Twitter. That was the,
yeah, he
that
does.
Was another thing this week.
Yeah.
That'll
but in
change.
The end, yeah, in the end, you know, it is how it always is. Money and, you know, business, you know, win out. And I think both men realize that, you know, this move and Ben Askren joining the UFC, you know, is what's best for business. And that's what they're going to go. And there are a lot of interesting matchups that they can put for Ben Askren. When he finally does make his debut with the UFC, it's going to be big, big news no matter who he fights. So it's definitely something to watch as we go into 2019.
I mean, the guy's called out everyone. He could fight Darren Till. I mean, he could fight Kamaru Usman. He could fight Colby Covington, who's probably going to get Woodley next. But there's a big line of guys that he can fight. Going to be an interesting thing to break down from a DraftKings perspective when we get going, because he's not the guy that's going to land 100, 200 significant strikes in a fight. You're going to rack up, well, you'll get ground strikes, I guess, but you're going to rack up most of your points from takedowns and passing guard, and he's going to jump right into it. He's still young enough to have a serious impact on the title picture. And, you know, the knock on him was nobody knows who he is. Can he really have a big fight? GSP doesn't really want to fight him because nobody knows him, but he kind of got after it on social media, and he's starting to make a name for himself pretty quickly. So that's going to be very interesting. I can't wait to break down his fights. I know I'm from Wisconsin, and I know he's from the area and has some wrestling camps in the area. So a couple friends that are a few years older than me, you know, are familiar through the wrestling avenues in the state with him. So gets a lot of support up here, and it's going to be awesome to see where it goes. But John, we got a main event to break down. We're going to shift our focus now to UFC 230. I mean, man, we could sit and talk about headline news all day, I think, but the focus here is going to be to get our users prepared to win some money on DraftKings this weekend. And we've got a pretty interesting main event. I mean, the UFC's capitalizing on the Derek Lewis post-fight interview. They're capitalizing on his name recognition being higher than ever, but they're feeding him to the dogs, man. DC is the heavyweight champion, and he will be welcoming him to the octagon in the main event. DraftKings has this right. I think Cormier is $9,600, one of the highest priced, I believe the highest priced on the slate. Lewis is $6,600. Cormier is a minus 700 betting favorite last time I checked. Lewis is a plus 500 betting favorite. So whatever your strategy is, you probably want to get a piece of this fight, because the odds to finish are minus 1,300, quite a bit. John, I mean, are the salaries right? And do you see this one playing out how most people think it's going to play out?
Yeah, you know, I think you have to, I think you have to pick Daniel Cormier in a relative landslide. Derek Lewis is what he is, and that's fine. He's a one punch knockout artist with insane power who has no cardio whatsoever, and the rest of his game is questionable, to put it mildly. I'm sure Lewis knows that. Cormier knows that. Lewis isn't, delusional. He's well aware of what's going on here.
I mean, a month ago, he's saying, man, I can't fight for no title because my cardio is not good enough.
But yeah, he knows.
Dollar signs say differently.
Yeah, the thing I will say about this is, as massive of an underdog as he is, and, obviously an extreme long shot, Derek Lewis's power gives him a chance to win any single fight he's in. The odds of finishing, being able to connect against Daniel Cormier are obviously far less than they would be against some fringe heavyweight. But Lewis has a puncher's chance, as he said, in any fight that he's in because of his power. Now, Lewis's last fight against Alexander Volkov, which is going to end up being less than a month ago, he was going to lose. He was 11 seconds away from losing, landed one of his insane monster shots, and next thing you know, he's fighting for a title at Madison Square Garden. So, if you make a ton of lineups, and I'm talking, at least a half dozen, 9, 10, whatever, and you want to throw Lewis in as your last guy, in your lineup because you have other heavy price guys that you like, it's not, the worst idea in the world considering how heavy of an underdog he is. But, obviously Daniel Cormier has the wrestling advantage. He has the experience advantage. He has the cardio advantage. And the other thing that never gets talked about is Daniel Cormier's chin. In all the professional fights that he's had, 23 and all, he's never officially been knocked out. He was stopped by John Jones, last July, and mm-hmm. that got overturned. So that ends up being a no contest. So yeah.
I mean,
officially,
he got kicked in the head, for anyone that missed that one. He got kicked in the head and went down. Like,
oh yeah,
but that by no means says he has a soft chin by any means. I mean, he's never been hurt like that in the past, and Bones can do that to people because he's Bones.
Oh yeah. And he took a ton of shots from Jones in the first fight between the two. He took a bunch of punishment from Alexander Gustafsson when the two fought. Anthony Johnson clipped him a couple times. Stipe got a couple shots in early in the last fight when he won the UFC Heavyweight Championship. So, this is certainly not an issue. Daniel Cormier has been hit before. His chin's holding up. He's 39 years old and he doesn't seem to be slowing down. Cormier has essentially said that, he's nearing the end, maybe two or three more fights and, that's it. I think everybody thought it was going to be Brock Lesnar next, but this card couldn't find a main event. And the dollar amount was apparently correct for both guys. So this is a heavy, about as big a test as it gets for Lewis. He knows that. He's not delusional. He's well aware of what he's looking at. I expect him to run across the cage and just try and knock Cormier out. The odds of it happening are low, but they're not non-zero. So you got to pick Cormier to win. I think it's going to be a little more entertaining than people think. I don't think Cormier is going to get a takedown 10 seconds in and just grind the whole way. I think Lewis will probably land a couple shots that Cormier will ultimately have to, survive. But he should be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Lewis will spend a lot of time on his back on this one because Cormier wants to avoid that power shot and can't really connect with it so much when your back is on the ground. I think that Cormier is going to try to play this one smart. I think I was at UFC 200, obviously a vastly, vastly different opponent when Cormier fought Anderson Silva. It was kind of a fight that was scrapped together. Well, I mean, much later than this one. It was originally supposed to be Bones, but it was something that was scrapped together late. This one's less than a month, so it's put together late. And I think this is part of the reason why some of the fans don't get behind DC, but I think he'll play this one a little bit conservatively, knowing what's at stake here. There's no reason to dance around and try to trade shots with a guy like Lewis on the feet. It's just not a good idea, and he has so much to lose, including, that Lesnar fight. If DC were to somehow lose, does that Lesnar fight go to Lewis? I don't know. So he's got a lot to lose. So I think he's going to fight this one smart. And the smart way to fight Lewis will be to get him on his back early and continue that. And that's going to be the game plan for most of the rounds. And Lewis is capable of getting up. Definitely got that size advantage. I mean, he's got to cut some serious weight to get to 265. I don't know about serious weight, but definitely does have to cut. So, yeah, I'm picking Cormier. You're picking Cormier. The entire staff picks Cormier. That is a sweep. But let's just looking through the DraftKings lobby here, John. There's a contest called the $15,000 MMA Mini Max. It's only $1 to entry, but it's one of those multi-entry tournaments, and it's 150 entries maximum. Let's just say hypothetically you enter that tournament 150 times. How many lineups are you going to put Lewis in?
I don't know, maybe half dozen, you know, a dozen, somewhere around there. He has a chance. You know, you used to see these fights where Demetrius Johnson and Ronda Rousey were -12 and -1300 favorites and all these crazy things. And you looked at the fight and you just said, there is no way in hell whoever their respective opponents were would be able to beat them. Just never, ever, ever going to happen. That's not the case here.
Yeah. This Lewis. More narrow than that. I agree with you.
Yeah. Lewis has, you know, has an equalizer in his repertoire. And the odds of getting it and landing any of them against someone like Cormier are slim. And partly that's because Cormier is so smart. Cormier is, he's not going to – I highly, highly doubt. He knows how dangerous Lewis is. He's not going to stand a distance to put on a show and get in a kick – get in a boxing match with Derek Lewis.
That's exactly what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. He's going to go in. He's going to try and throw him on his back right away and just grind him. And, you know, there's no doubt the longer this fight goes, the worse it is for Derek Lewis. There's no way he's going to end up – he's going to be as fresh, you know, even in round two as he is when this thing starts. So I actually think – I don't know why. I'm for a fight that's as lopsided as it is with the odds and salaries, I'm kind of looking forward to this one probably a little more than I should be.
Yeah, right on. And I know the fight fans that watched the last card with Conor McGregor and got their first exposure to Derek Lewis are most definitely looking forward to it as well. So, I agree with you. A puncher's chance here. It should be entertaining. I wouldn't stack this fight as in use both fighters even in a cash game because I don't think there's going to be a ton of striking volume either way. Or Lewis, even in a loss, I don't see Lewis getting too many more than, 20, 30 fantasy points on DraftKings. So I'd probably avoid stacking this one. But, there's, again, out of 150, I think it'd be fair to maybe get 10% exposure, 10 to 15 lineups in there, something like that. That jives with me just fine, and I can't wait to watch this one as well, John. Let's move on, though, to the co-main event. Got a middleweight matchup between Chris Weidman and Jacare Souza. This was originally supposed to be Weidman versus Rockhold. Rockhold had to withdraw due to injury, and now we have Weidman-Souza. Still a pretty good fight. It jumbled up the whole card. We'll get to that as we move down the pay-per-view portion, but Weidman enters this one as a pretty decent favorite. He's a -160 betting favorite. Souza +140. Weidman's 8,500 on DraftKings, where Souza is 7,700. Odds to finish are -150, so pretty decent. Our staff is pretty heavy on Weidman in this one. John, do you want to try to explain why?
You know, I picked Weidman, but it wasn't one of those things where when you mentioned the reshuffling of the card, when I saw this matchup was going to be announced and this is what was going to happen, it certainly wasn't one of those fights where I looked at it and immediately said, oh, Weidman's going to win, without looking at it a little deeper. Not like Cormier and Lewis where you see it announced and you're like, okay, Cormier's going to win. You know, I didn't feel that way with Weidman, but he ultimately got the nod for me, and I was really looking forward to the Weidman-Rockhold fight simply because between the first fight between the two, Chris Weidman was winning until he went for a spinning back shot foolishly, and Luke Rockhold turned the whole tide of that fight. So this is a good fight, and the reason this is an interesting fight for me is Jacare Souza and Luke Rockhold are completely different kinds of opponents. Rockhold, as good as he is on the mat, his best asset is his long frame and his kickboxing. So that's a fight where Chris Weidman definitely would have wanted to try and implement his wrestling game. Against Jacare, who has struggled on the feet lately, is getting hit a bit more, and obviously Jacare's biggest strength is his world-class ground game. So if Weidman is going to go for takedowns against Jacare, you know, Jacare can submit anybody, even from the bottom. So Weidman has to be careful, even if he's in top position. So Weidman might be better served in this fight to try and keep it on the feet, which is not something you say generally in fights with Chris Weidman. And Weidman has said that, the UFC told him he's going to get a title shot if he wins. He's 1-3 in his last four fights. So I know there's, some flukiness in there and, some controversy, but, he's still 1-3 in his last four fights. But when you look at it, his only wins over Kelvin Gastelum, who's about to fight for the middleweight title against Robert Whittaker. So I guess he is right there when you think about it. Odds and salaries, 8,500 and 7,700 seem about right to me. Vegas odds, maybe a little too high. For my liking, I would think Weidman should probably be more in the maybe 125, 130 area instead of minus 160. But this is a good fight. It's not as good as Watney and Rockhold 2 would have been, but this is a good fight. And Jacare, even though he's going to be 39 years old next month, he's still good. He's still in good shape. He's still undoubtedly one of the, you know, best four or five middleweights on the world, in the world somewhere in there. And he's fought better than his 3-3 record in his last six fights would indicate. So this is a good fight. And, you know, Jacare, even both guys, even with, you know, their semi struggles lately, are going to be pretty close to a title shot no matter who wins, especially since Rockhold had to withdraw. And, you know, that's probably your other contender.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, John, this one is, Sousa's livelier than I think people are giving him credit for in this one. This is one where five of our six staff members went ahead and picked Chris Weidman. I was a little bit surprised on that, and I was the only one that went against the grain and picked Sousa, and I'm going to try to explain my rationale why. Let me preface this by saying there are a lot of large discrepancies on this card. There are very few close fights here, so it's very hard to make cash games on DraftKings. You're gonna have to pick some big time underdogs, at least three of them, chances are, if you want to pick five or six or three favorites, I guess, and complete your lineup of six fighters. But I like Sousa for a few reasons. One, like you mentioned, Weidman was preparing for Luke Rockhold, and Sousa is a 100% different type of opponent than Rockhold, so that factors in a little bit, and it's a little bit of a late notice fight, so that's probably why he thinks he's getting a title shot after this, because they made some type of deal within that. But again, it's a shift in your camp pretty late in the game, and I just don't know if it's as far apart as the numbers say. Here's how I see this one happening. Now, in Weidman's last fight, he was able to manhandle Kelvin Gastelum on the ground because he does have quite a big size advantage over Gastelum, who is a former welterweight fighter. Weidman, you know, got position. He was able to pass guard and eventually submitted him. I think I'm a little inclined to believe that Weidman in this scenario might be a little bit overconfident in his jiu-jitsu. I don't think he, like you said, he'd be smart to try to keep this one standing. I don't think he, in his head, is afraid of going to the ground with Jacare Sousa. And in reality, maybe he should be a little bit. And I think he's going to not hesitate to shoot for the takedown, not hesitate to get into a grappling position with Jacare. And I think there's a more than fair chance that Jacare catches him. And it was very, very difficult to pick this one straight up, because on paper, I do believe in a lot of the things that you do that would lead me to pick Weidman, but I think Sousa's a livelier dog than people are expecting, and on a card that there's not a lot of great underdog plays on, I'm going to use Sousa in my lineup here, and I think he's going to win just because of, you know, maybe the difference in perceived grappling ability versus actual grappling ability, and that's what does it for me. It's a close one, John.
Yeah, I have no problem with, you know, with that theory. And the thing that worries me probably most about Weidman, which I didn't mention, is how banged up he's been of late. He, you know, he hasn't been healthy. Mm-hmm. He's looking at, you know, just about 16 months between fights when he steps into the cage on Saturday. And mm-hmm. it's, you know, he's had hand problems. I believe yeah. it's his thumb. I think he had a knee issue. He's been banged up. So,
and Sousa's fought twice in 2018. He beat Derek Brunson with a first round knockout. Then he lost the split decision to Kelvin Gastelum, who Weidman also beat. So there's the common opponent recently. But yeah, more active and less blatantly injured, at least one would think.
Yeah, I have no problem with the pick of Jacare right here. Like I said, the odds, the salary is, you know, about right, maybe $100 here either way. But Jacare is definitely a live underdog, and I like the point that you made as far as you know, the gaps on this card. You know, a lot of heavy favorites, and that makes it really hard to construct your lineup. Which is one of the reasons I just advocated that if you make a bunch of lineups, that Derek Lewis isn't the worst idea in the world. Mm-hmm. Simply because there are a lot of high-priced fighters on this card, and if you want to use them, you're going to have to try and find some kind of value somewhere. Mm-hmm. But this is a good fight, and actually, you know, two guys. And Weidman's not old, obviously, but you know, two guys who are getting up there, and you know, it's a fight that I don't know if a lot of people thought we'd ever get to see. You know, God knows Jacare is, you know, going to be 39 next month, so you don't know how many fights he has left. And I'm glad we're going to get to see this matchup, because it's certainly a fight that didn't appear to be on the radar, you know, all that long ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this fight and the rest of the fights on the pay-per-view card actually all come in the middleweight division. So, you know, at least keep all the rankings shuffling to one division here, and we'll see what happens. So I think we both have pretty good, reasonable takes on Weidman and Sousa, and why we'd use them both. The next one that we're going to talk about, though, John, it seems to me like it's a little bit more lopsided. Another middleweight matchup, of course, David Branch takes on Jared Cannonier. Now, Branch was supposed to take on Jacare Souza. That he had kind of challenged him. He even ordered alligator meat online and ate it in some social media. Like, it was really a thing that they had going, but of course the Luke Rockhold injury shuffled everything around. Now Branch is kind of a loser in this situation because he gets a less higher profile opponent, and there's more pressure on him because he has to win. The discrepancies here are clear. Branch is a $9,300 fighter. Cannonier's a $6,900 fighter. Branch minus 360, his opponent plus 300. Vegas likes this one to finish a little bit at minus 125 here. But yeah, I guess maybe explain to the listeners why Branch is a big favorite and how confident you are using him on DraftKings.
I'm really confident in Branch, and to be honest, I feel bad for him. He, like you mentioned, he of this whole shakeup that ended up on this card with the Luke Rockhold injury, Branch is by far the biggest loser in this whole situation. Wadman and Jacare end up fighting each other, so that's still two high-profile guys there. But Branch goes from fighting Jacare to fighting a guy in Cannonier who, as far as I'm concerned, is really nothing more than roster depth. He's had a bunch of chances with the company and really just hasn't shown much.
One and three in his last four.
Yeah, there's just not much there. He's fought at heavyweight. He's fought a light heavyweight. Now he's going to fight a middleweight. There's just not much there as far as I'm concerned with Cannonier. And Branch has very, very little to gain. He turned 37 years old in September. A little over a month ago, the end of September. This is a fight he's supposed to win. And if he doesn't win, obviously he's going to go to the back of the line. And even if he does win, which, I think we're all expecting, he has very, very little to gain from it. All it's going to do is, knock 6 months off his career or whatever until he fights again. Branch is really, really good. 22-4 overall. Very strong, solid all-around game. 6 career wins by knockout, 7 by submission. Does a lot of things well. Fought Luke Rockhold last September in a fight. He was winning, undoubtedly, until he got caught late in the second and ended up getting knocked out. Returned this last April and knocked out Thiago Santos. So Branch is really good. I was, when the original scheduled Branch and Jacare fight was announced, I was undecided on who I was going to pick. It was like 50-50 for me in a coin flip. I never really actually made a pick because the fight got canceled, but that was up in the air for me to give you an idea of how good Branch is. Had a lot of success in the World Series, now PFL, former World Series of Fighting. Branch is really good. He's underrated because he hasn't been in the UFC all that long, recently in his most recent run. But he's good, and he should win this fight, I would think, fairly easily. But, again, he's the big loser out of all this because he has nothing to gain and everything to lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he was the double champ in another promotion before it was even cool, really. And, he comes in as a heavy favorite. I think he deserves it. I mean, he's a very well-rounded martial artist. So if it goes to the ground, I think that especially favors him a little bit. I mean, anybody that's calling out Jacare Souza in a fight has to be pretty damn confident in their grappling ability. So there's no doubt in that. At 9,300, when you're spending that much on a fighter, you're pretty much banking on a stoppage. You definitely want to get a stoppage. So that is, that's a little bit concerning to me because I could see it maybe going the distance unless he's able to get him to the ground and finish him. But yeah, out of the big favorites on this one, I think Branch is as good as any to put in your lineup. And you mentioned Cannonier used to fight at light heavyweight, but Branch actually has the 2-inch height and 1-inch reach advantage. Cannonier more of a striker by trade, but I think Branch, even though he'll be able to hang with him enough, and Branch of course has the advantages when it's on the ground. So I think Branch is going to get in. He's going to take care of business. He's going to win this fight. The only concern that I have is maybe it's by decision instead of by finish, which makes his $9,300 price tag a little bit tough to deal with. Are you with me there?
It definitely could be. It's interesting because I think Branch certainly has a lot more natural ability than Cannonier. Mm-hmm. But again, this is a case where he has, a different opponent on late notice. That's always a bit risky. You don't know how a guy's going to handle that. Branch's athletic ability and, overall skill level should ultimately win out when all is said and done. But, the late notice opponent change is something to always keep in the back of your mind.
Yeah, maybe he takes it a little bit more carefully than you would in his previous fight. But let's keep going down these middleweights, John. This is one that I can best describe as kind of a filler fight. They needed another fight for the pay-per-view, and due to all that shuffling that we had previously discussed, yeah, they needed another fight, and they bring up another middleweight matchup. It's between Carl Roberson and Jack Marshman. Roberson, a pretty big favorite, 8,700. Marshman, 7,500. Roberson, the betting odds match up just fine with it. He's a minus 270 favorite. Marshman plus 230. Odds of finish minus 205. So you could conceivably want to get a piece of this. Two guys actually picked Marshman in our staff picks, Evan and Joe. And I definitely respect their opinions as well. But I believe you went Roberson. And can you explain to me what you know about him and why you were leaning that direction?
I went Roberson. I'm going to start this off by saying I would probably avoid this fight at all costs. It's a very, very strange, like you just mentioned, it's a weird fight in general. It's a very, very weird fight to be on the main card of a pay-per-view. I know this isn't the deepest undercard the UFC has ever produced, but to me, this is a really, really strange fight to put on the main card of a pay-per-view. My reason for picking Roberson was fairly straightforward. He's definitely the better athlete. You know, he moves better. And from the little we've seen of Marshman in his four UFC fights, the record 500-2-2. But he's just, there's not a lot there. It's more, I
mean, his losses are to Carlos Jr. and Santos, so decent losses at least.
Right. I think we would both agree Carlos Jr. and Thiago are both better than Roberson. So, you know, you certainly can't say this is going to be the toughest guy that Marshman's ever been inside the cage with. But this fight has a wide range of outcomes. You know, it's a couple guys who, you know, we don't have a ton of background on in a spot on the car that, you know, they probably shouldn't be on. If you told me this is the last time Roberson or Marshman would ever fight on the main card of a pay-per-view, I would tell you the odds are probably considerably better than 50-50. Mm-hmm. But there are a bunch of guys, from what I've seen from Marshman, there are a few guys on the roster who fight like he does in the sense of they mostly get by with grit and determination. Jim Miller is, you know, Jim Miller has a world-class ground game, but, you know, Jim Miller's at the point in his career where it's pretty much just grit and toughness at this point. Evan Dunham, you know, who recently stepped aside, same thing. You know, he has capable mixed martial arts skills, but him surviving in fights is pretty much based upon grit and toughness, you know, and just sticking with it. And, you know, that's what I see from Marshman. Roberson's the better athlete, but, you know, even though we're picking Roberson, I think both of us, you know, neither of these guys, even Roberson, he's not a huge prospect. You know, there's not a lot here either way. And, you know, once in a while you get a fight where they put a big time prospect against a nobody, you know, to try and put him on the main card of a pay-per-view or whatever, whether it's, you know, Mackenzie Dern or, you know, on a high spot on the card or whatever. That's not the case here. It's a weird fight with a wide range of outcomes, and it's just one I would avoid.
Yeah, I think Dana's just hoping to see a finish here, and maybe he knows something that we don't, because the odds of the finish are only minus 205. He's just hoping to get some entertainment, and again, I just describe it as a filler fight. Now, when I turn the film on and I watch Roberson's fights again, his athleticism is what I fell in love with, and that's why I picked him in this fight. So that's why I went that way. But I'll play a little devil's advocate here. Why not? I mean, I asked a couple of the guys, you know, for a little more in-depth reasoning on why they went Marshman. And, you know, for them, it boiled down to maybe thinking Roberson's a little bit overrated. I mean, in theory, Roberson is supposed to be the kickboxer. But when you go back to his professional kickboxing career, I believe he's 0-3. So former kickboxer doesn't necessarily mean he's going to dominate at all in the striking battle. I mean, when you look at the numbers, now Roberson only has a 2-fight sample size, but just under 3 significant strikes landed per minute for Roberson in those 2 fights, and 3.5 for Marshman in his. So, you know, maybe there's an edge there. For me, this one is as close to, you know, maybe both of them should be 8,000, or one should be 8,000, 8,200, because I see the athleticism and I get that, and that's why I picked Roberson. But this is one of those that, kind of like Souza, and Marshman's even $200 cheaper than Souza. I could see using him in a DraftKings lineup, because, like we've been discussing, that seems to be a theme. These fights, they're wide margins in these fights, and there just isn't a whole lot of upset potential. And I think, you know, with the minus 205 odds to finish and the betting odds being, you know, close-ish with respect to what we're looking at on this card. Maybe there's a chance for Marshman, but officially on the record, I'll go Roberson. But this one is closer to a toss-up than the odds indicate. At least that's the way I see this one, Jeff.
Yeah, it's definitely there. You know, the next fight we're going to talk about, we certainly have stronger feelings on. But like you said, this looks like a fight that they put on where they're expecting a lot of action. You know, maybe just hopefully get a knockout and, you know, just get the crowd going.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Dana's like, okay, one of you guys knock the other one out, I'll double your bonus or something like that.
Yeah, that's all.
You
know, something like that.
That stuff happens sometimes. But anyway, yeah, let's talk about this next middleweight fight, John. An underrated fight. One of the reasons I'm going to make sure that I turn on this pay-per-view right at the beginning, because I like both these guys and they're going to put on an exciting fight. We've got Derek Brunson and Israel Adesanya, the last style bender. Adesanya, I was a little surprised to see how much of a favorite he was. He's 9,100 on DraftKings. Brunson 7,100. Adesanya -320 betting favorite. Brunson +260. So when you think about the salaries, they match up with the odds for sure. Odds to finish on this one are -225. John, we're going to see some really, really creative striking in this one. I bet you this fight's going to be highly, highly entertaining. Who do you have in this one?
I'm taking Brunson in an upset. This was my big upset pick on the card. This is going to be a really, really, really good fight. Entertaining, two guys who in a really, really short period of time developed a legitimate dislike for each other. Brunson and Adesanya just don't get along. Derek Brunson is underrated. He's been underrated for a long time. He's 34 years old now. He'll be 35 in January. 2-3 in his last five fights, but when you dig deeper, he's fought better than that. November 2016, almost 2 years ago, was knocked out by Robert Whittaker, but those who remember that fight, he had Whittaker in massive, massive, massive trouble before he kind of, you know, got wild and Whittaker ended up turning the tables on him. His next fight in February, he lost the unanimous decision to Anderson Silva, which was a joke. Everybody in the building knew that Brunson won that fight. Rebounded from those two fights to quickly knock out Lyoto Machida and Daniel Kelly. And then this past January was knocked out in the first round by Jacare after, you know, getting nailed with a head kick. Derek Brunson has explosiveness that very, very few fighters in the company in any weight class can match. He can go from 0 to 60, you know, in the blink of an eye. And that's, you know, believe it or not, that's kind of troubled him a bit in the past. He's gotten wild like he did in the Whittaker fight. And Adesanya is extremely interesting. He's a fighter who is one of the most unorthodox strikers in the whole company. Whether, you know, you see guys like maybe Yair Rodriguez or, you know, these guys who throw all these crazy strikes from all these odd angles. And that's exactly what Adesanya does. He's virtually impossible to train for because you just can't find a sparring partner who can mimic what he does. But Brunson has an explosiveness and athleticism that is really difficult to match. And I'm taking Brunson in an upset. But the one thing that concerns me again with Brunson, and it's going to be an issue in every fight that he has, is his fight IQ, it's just not very good. You know, he had Whittaker beaten, essentially, and he got stupid. He tried to do too much, and he ended up paying for it. I'm worried on a fight-to-fight basis that his fight IQ is going to hamper him. You know, if he has Adesanya in trouble and he tries to go for broke and pick up a finish, you know, when it's not quite there yet, Adesanya certainly has the striking skills to turn the table on him and finish him. But even if you think Adesanya is going to win, I was really surprised with both the odds and the salaries. There's certainly not a $2,000 gap between the two. And Adesanya at -320 was very surprising to me. I would have probably had him, you know, maybe, I don't know, -200, somewhere around there. Maybe have Brunson at +175, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can buy that. I definitely can. And
these are all in on Adesanya. And that's not a knock on Adesanya. You know, he's really, really good. But I just think Brunson brings explosiveness and athleticism to the table that very, very few guys can match. And I think he's getting underrated a bit because of the Jacare knockout. He was knocked out in the first round, and, you know, people all of a sudden are down on him. But, you know, everybody gets knocked out.
It can happen. So I'm with you, John, where maybe Adesanya is a little bit greater than a favorite than I expected. But I will say that this guy is no joke. You mentioned the unorthodox striking. That's going to be his signature. He is going to throw kicks. And, you know, hey, that happens to be how Derek Brunson was knocked out his last time. But that's not necessarily the reason I'm picking Adesanya. Adesanya is a growing martial artist. He seems like a guy who's getting better every time out. He even posts like his own film breakdowns on social media, like here's how I invented this elbow move. He'll come at you like he's feigning a jab, but really pull it back and throw an elbow. And the only other guy that I've seen that before is you know, despite his antics and what has all happened over the last few years, is one of my favorite and most respected fighters of all time in John Bones Jones. Now, I'm not going to call Adesanya the second coming of John Bones Jones, but physically, in terms of the long limbs, that kind of thing, he has those types of advantages here down in the middleweight division. Now, it's not crazy over Brunson. It's only a 3-inch reach advantage, 3-inch height advantage in this one. But Adesanya is going to be throwing kicks constantly. He's going to be throwing elbows constantly. If maybe Brunson catches him and tries to pounce, Adesanya will turn around and hit him with a spinning elbow. That's one of the moves that you'll see him definitely throw a couple times in this fight. They don't call him the last style bender for nothing. I'm a big fan of Adesanya, what he was able to do in his last fight. I definitely picked him against Brad Tavares. He's 3-0 in the UFC, so maybe a little bit inexperienced, but he did fight a 5-round fight on the Tough Finale. I wish this one was a 5-round fight. That would be the fan in me wants that to happen. But I just think that Adesanya is going to get more creative and find more ways to win. Now, I don't really particularly remember an instance where his chin was really, really, really tested. But I look at, you know, he fought Brad Tavares last. Brad Tavares is a very respectable fighter. Outstruck him 119-40. So there's another good thing for fantasy points. $9,100 is a little tough for a fantasy lineup. But again, if you use a couple underdogs, I think you can get there. So I'm in the Adesanya camp. I'm with you, John. We're not as much. I didn't expect to see this big of a favorite. But as far as picking this one, at least in my mind, it's a little bit clear. Now, Brunson, 2-5 in his last, or 2-3 in his last five fights. Those wins were against, you mentioned, Lyoto Machida and Daniel Kelly, two guys that I think we can both agree probably well past any kind of prime, a little bit washed up. Israel Adesanya is not that. He is an entirely different monster. He is a developing martial artist, and I think he can find a way to get a finish, which is why I'm inclined to use him on DraftKings. So I guess agree to disagree here, but I can see Brunson as an underdog play, but for me, it's more like in 2 of 10 lineups, where I think you're leaning more of like 6 to 7 of 10 lineups.
Yeah, about that. And Brunson has to be careful, because what makes him great is, you know, that explosiveness he has, particularly in short spurts. But if he does have Adesanya hurt, he's got to be careful, you know, not to go too far with that like he did with Whitaker. So, you know, it's a delicate balance. It's something that he's struggled with in the past. And I definitely think a 3-round fight probably favors Brunson a bit more.
Oh, yes.
Any 5-round fight where you can let Adesanya pick you apart, you know, is going to be difficult to beat him. But this is a good fight. You know, I was up and down on the pick. You know, it was certainly not a clear pick for me, but this should be an entertaining fight. And it's, you know, two guys who there's room for immediate advancement in the middleweight division, given, you know, the age of some of the guys and the injuries of some others. So, you know, the winner here is going to come flying up the rankings.
Mm-hmm. The whole division is going to be on showcase Saturday night, and it's going to paint a pretty clear picture of what the next steps are. The last point I'll make on this fight, odds to finish, like I said, are -225. But outside of the main event with Cormier and Lewis that everyone expects to end at a finish, that's the second highest odds to finish on the pay-per-view card. So we like this one to finish, and that's why you want to get a piece of this one. This is one that, you know, you're going to stand on one side of the argument, whether it's John's, whether it's mine. This is one that wherever you land on this argument is going to determine the direction you go with your entire lineup building process, especially if you're only a one lineup guy. Of course, MMA is a sport where you typically need to play more than that to maybe involve a little bit of game theory in it. You know, we could do a whole podcast on the strategy there, but you need to sit on one side here. But speaking of DraftKings, John's, we've talked about how there are a lot of very high margins in betting odds on this card. Are there any other underdogs that stand out to you on this fight, whether it's the main card? I think most of mine come on the main card, but with you, or anything else that stands out, anyone else that you think has a reasonable chance at an upset that can maybe get you some salary relief on DraftKings?
The only one that stood out right away when I looked at the odds were and the salaries were Brian Kelleher on the undercard against Montel Jackson. Kelleher's at 7,900, which is really quite surprising. A New York guy, You know, should have the crowd behind him, and he's, you know, he's been good in his UFC career. Keller has had some impressive performances in native Long Island. You know, he beat Henan Barrow, and I know that doesn't mean all that much these days like he used to, but still beat Henan Barrow. Came in on short notice in his UFC debut and submitted Uriel Alcantara, who's, you know, very good. And, you know, in his last fight in May, he was knocked out by John Lineker. You know, big deal. Lots of people get locked out by John Lineker. No shame in that. So he's facing a guy in Montel Jackson, who, again, very inexperienced, only has 7 professional fights under his belt at the age of 26. Product of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, you know, came off the board, fought Ricky Simon in his first official fight in August, and dropped the unanimous decision. So I was really surprised Keller was an underdog. Not much of an underdog, 7,900 compared to Jackson's 8,300. But like we mentioned earlier, in a card with a lot of high-priced fighters, you're going to have to try and find some underdog value somewhere. And Keller was the one guy who immediately stood out.
Yeah, that's funny. I swear we didn't plan this, but I was looking at the odds value. Kelleher was the guy that actually jumped up to me, too. I mean, plus 110, 7,900. Again, the disparities on this card are huge, so he's good. The other thing I liked about Kelleher is over 5 significant strikes landed per minute during any fights with the UFC WEC on Fight Metric here, so I always like to check out those stats a little bit. So the volume actually bodes well. So if they go all 3 rounds, you know, maybe win or lose, he can find you a decent amount of fantasy points, which would make him a pretty decent option in cash games for me. Otherwise, I mean, if you don't go with that, you're looking at, you know, maybe you use Marshman, maybe you agree with me and use Souza, maybe you agree with John and use Brunson, but those are your best salary relief options on this card. It's really a tough one to play.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, if you don't go that route, you know, you're looking at fighters like Roxanne Modafferi at 6,800 or Ben Saunders at 6,700. And if that's the route you go, all you're really essentially doing is betting on their experience. You know, they've been fighting for so long and, you know, they've had so many fights against quality opponents in, you know, Modafferi's case, really like a pioneer of women's MMA. So, you know, if you're doing that, you're essentially betting on experience, at least with Kelleher. If you put him in your lineup, you know, you're betting on talent and ability, which is, you know, the way to go.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I mean, Ben Saunders has a ton of knockout ability, or knockout susceptibility, I should say. So I don't really like using him. I think as long as her weight cut is fine, Sajara Eubanks, she's angry, she's motivated, she wants that title shot. I'm actually, even at 9,400, I'm trying to use her however I can. You know, Stars and Scrubs is really the way to go in this one, but neither Modafferi or Sanders have a ton of appeal for me. So hopefully we gave you guys enough information to put some lineups together, to have some fun. This is going to be a fun card. I mean, the UFC makes its annual pilgrimage to Madison Square Garden. I don't think it quite stacks up to some of the past years, you know, when McGregor headlined or even the year before. But it's a good card. It's a good, fun card. I'm going to have fun. I think we're all going to have fun. You got any final thoughts on the card, John?
Yeah, you know, it's not what it was the first couple trips that, you know, they made. You know, you don't have that one, you know, insane fight. You know, they tried, you know, the UFC tried for months to try and get something really significant done here. And, you know, for a while, it was looking good. You know, they would have had Poirier and Diaz, and then you have Weidman and Rockhold, and you have Branch and Souza. Mm-hmm. You know, they talked about Paulo Costa and Yoel Romero. That was on the card before Romero wasn't cleared. So, you know, this was stacked up to be bigger than it is. Still not bad. Not in the days and age where we get some pay-per-views and we just stare at each other like, you know, what are they doing? It's certainly not that. But it's, you know, pretty much just, you know, it's a middle-of-the-road pay-per-view card as far as I can tell.
I'm at least happy that they didn't settle for Shevchenko and Eubanks in the main event. That would have been great.
Yeah, we talked about that on our last podcast before 229, and that looked like the way they were going at the time. And we briefly mentioned how much of a disaster that would have been, not only for the fight, that fight itself, but then you would have lost Shevchenko and Joanna, which thankfully we're going to get in Toronto. So exactly. That ended up working out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I sure hope they find a way to rebook Paulo Costa and Yoel Romero, because that'll be a pretty great fight, I think. A couple of Jack guys looking to do some headhunting, and that'll be a fun one. But hey, that's going to wrap things up for us today. It was a pleasure, as always, John, doing this with you. A couple quick housekeeping things. First of all, first and foremost, thanks everybody who listens, who tuned in, who made it this far, who bared with us this far. If you're not a RotoWire subscriber, give it a shot. rotowire.com/free. I mean, the MMA content is free for everybody, but you know, there's some other great DFS content across the board. So definitely we want you as part of the community. If you don't want to be a RotoWire subscriber, that's fine. But the best thing you can do to help us out is just take a second when you're done with this, go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating and review. That's one of the most helpful things you guys can do. And I'm always very, very grateful, John. I can, for sure, you can say the same. So thank you. Thanks again for listening, for in advance for the rating and the review. And of course, for just being a part of the RotoWire community. We're always happy to have you. So once again, follow John on Twitter at JonLitterine. You can follow me on Twitter at JakeSki52. I'll be doing a little bit of promo for some of the other RotoWire MMA content that will be coming your way. But as far as John and I, we're going to be back with you guys prior to UFC 231 on December 8th. That is Max Holloway and Brian Ortega. Great fight. Glad that one's finally happening. But until then, we will catch you next time, and best of luck in those DraftKings lineups.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.